Hey friends, my name is Anurag, you're listening to Millennial Musings, and I'm so thankful that you've joined us for a brand new episode. Now, when I first started this show, the idea was for Millennial Musings to be a platform in which us millennials could share our thoughts, our ideas, our visions, our goals, our objectives, the way we perceive the world. And for other generations, especially older ones, to be able to listen in on the episodes and get a sense of how we felt about different things and how we thought about them. Now, it would be quite hypocritical of me if I didn't afford younger generations the same opportunity via this show so that we can understand them better. I think one of the most interesting discussions that's happening in our world today is about how younger generations, spearheaded by Gen Zs using mediums like TikTok and the internet, are really staking claim to what they want and what they want this world to be like. And I think that's a fascinating discussion, because as we grow older, as we millennials grow older, very soon we are going to have to come to terms with understanding what Gen Zs want. In fact, we're already there. So I actually wanted to bring somebody from that very generation, Gen Z, to come in and tell us about what is it that they want, how is it that they perceive the world, and how do they interact with internet and the technology that they have immense access to. And it wouldn't make sense just to bring any random Gen Z on board, it might as well be an expert. And Vishal, my incredible guest for this episode, is actually an expert in Gen Z marketing through his firm Fireflies and the several other engagements and experiences that he's had. So without further ado, on today's episode, we have Vishal Rajmenon, who's going to talk to us about how we can understand Gen Z better and how the future of Gen Z marketing is going to evolve with all the tools that are at our disposal today. This is Millennial Musings, and I'm your host, Anurag. Thank you, as always, for tuning in.
Vishal, my bro, thank you so much for joining Millennial Musings, man. I am so excited to have you, but also, today from is going to be like a little bit of a departure from our usual like kind of setting that we have on my show. In as much as where we talk usually about millennials and like what millennials are doing and how the world reacts to millennials and how millennials react to the world, today we kind of like push it a little forward. You're not only my first Gen Z guest, but you also happen to be an expert in the field as well. So let's talk about that. I've known you for a while, so I'm super excited to have you, brother. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. And you know, super excited to be your first Gen Z guest as well. Hope I do some justice to the Gen. And I know it's going to be an incredible convo.
Right now, what you're doing in many ways is like trying to understand the importance of an entire community or an entire generation of people and how that relates to the world. Talk me through about Gen Zs and what is it that makes Gen Z special?
Yeah, so this is a very, I think a lot of the things that characterize this generation has to do with how the world is changing, first of all. Like, I think we've been put into this world where there's it's a lot more competitive. I think that's made, has shaped a lot of the things that's been happening, like in the sense that, yes, there's a lot more access to information. Tech has increased at a very, you know, has developed in a very fast pace. We're seeing a lot more of globalization, people coming together, and all of those, obviously, those good things have led to more opportunities, but in relation to that, it also made things more competitive for this generation. I think that's a very, so by nature, we've also had to work, I feel, especially we've had to work a lot more harder as a generation to get sort of these opportunities to achieve certain things. But in general, yeah, I think this gen is very, I don't want to use the word, but woke. They are a lot more aware of what's happening. They are a lot more, I think, they understand the responsibility that they have, because you know they're seeing not just for what the world is right now, but what the world is going to be for them in 10, 15 years, 20 years. They know they're going to be here for a long time. A lot of the responsibility is going to be on their shoulders. That's why I think a lot of them are now being a lot more involved with causes bigger than themselves. So you've seen live examples with the Black Lives Matter movement in the US. I felt like a lot of it was spearheaded by this gen. Then a lot of them being involved in sustainability initiatives, even in consumer behavior, in the way that what they purchase, the kind of brands that they you know, interact with, the kind of content that they're consuming, especially even with this whole cancel culture. They're being very, very strict and very, you know, no bullshit sort of situation where if you as a brand, you know, decide to do something wrong or doesn't speak to their values, that's it. You're not going to get their attention unless you do something to, you know, I don't know, to fix it. But so those key, so with all these things in mind, I think some of the key characteristics of this gen is that they are they're ambitious, a lot of them. I would say it's a mix of them being hopeful, but also what I would also say is that this gen is a little soft, and I have to come out and say that, even being a Gen Z myself. I do feel like some of them take things too seriously. That's what this is going to a little more about, the pitfalls of this gen. What I personally, from a very unbiased opinion, looking at this generation of what we're doing, what I see. But I'm hopeful, you know. I feel like the future for the world is in good hands. I think that we're going to figure ourselves out. I think keeping that ambitious nature in mind, Gen Z is going to do some. They are doing incredible things. They're being more entrepreneurial in nature. A lot more startups coming out of the scene. They want more. You know, they're questioning the status quo. They're really not settling for just the bare minimum. So this combination of things becoming a lot more difficult for them, given that it's, you know, there's so much more opportunities, it's also become a lot more difficult. And mixed with the fact that they are ambitious, it's a very tricky situation for the Gen to be in, because they're just like, okay, we want to do a lot, but, you know, it is going to take us time and effort, and a lot more effort than what it was 10, 15 years ago to get to where we want. But yeah, I'm excited for this gen. I'm excited to see what they're going to do. And it's always going to adapt, as you know, like this generation is going to change and evolve. And it's going to be exciting to see what they're going to do.
Yeah. And you know what excites me about this generation is that it's truly the first generation that's like the internet generation, right? Like everybody that's technically a part of this generation, regardless of like the endpoints of it, are naturally, I think one of the defining factors is like the comfort and ease with using technology and the internet in interacting in your day-to-day basis, right? Like I think every generation has had its own technology that has like anchored the way the technology has responded to the world and the way the generation has responded to the world. But truly Gen Z is the internet generation in many ways. And I think that power is what we're seeing, blossoming in many ways. And so my question is, I think because it's a truly internet generation, it's truly a generation that is so comfortable and understands the nuances of how to utilize these tools to, you know, like push your agenda forward or push your thoughts and ideas forward. How do you think other generations might be able to kind of understand this generation a little better? Because I think that is that, like, you know, kind of positioning of conflict, at least in that, like, my dad doesn't get my brother, you know, like my brother's a Gen Z as well. And like, my dad just doesn't get him. Like, why does he talk this way? Why does he do this? Why does he do this on the internet? I find it difficult, man. Like, you know, my brother and I have a 9-year age difference, and I find it difficult. And so I think, how do you reconcile that? Like, how does other generations understand a Gen Z?
You're absolutely right. I think with the advent of the internet and with all the apps that are coming in, especially now with TikTok, it's incredible the opportunity of the platforms that this gen has to vocalize what their thoughts are, to achieve whatever their goals are. You know, like now we see 14-year-olds with 2 million followers on TikTok. What does a young person do with that kind of attention? That's powerful. Brands have worked for 10, 15 years, not able to get that attention. And there's this 14-year-old girl doing dances, getting that attention in like 2 weeks or like a month or a year. So yeah, it's exciting to see that trend. And you know, and it's also good to see that they're using these platforms for the right purposes. And largely a lot of them are are devoting their attention to bringing awareness to issues that are important, like how I addressed it with, you saw that with the Black Lives Matter movement, that a lot of people on TikTok had, like, you know, links to petitions, to donations, to things like that. They were speaking about it, they were giving their thoughts on it. And, you know, it's generally good to see those that, you know, they're using the platforms for the right reasons, at least a majority of them. Obviously, you have the bad eggs. But bad apples, I don't know what the the exact term is. But yeah, so I think in terms of understanding, yeah, even I'm in the older Gen Z category. Like I'm 23 right now, and Gen Z starts at, I think, even 2010, if I'm not wrong. So what I'd say is a key thing to recognize is that they're very, the in terms of content and the way that they consume it, they're in a lot of places. That's it. They're on Instagram, they're on Snapchat, they're on TikTok, they're on Facebook, they're on YouTube, and they use all these platforms for different purposes. So again, I think the first step is to recognize that it is a generation that's, you can't just target them in one place or try to understand them through one platform. You know, a lot of brands now think that, oh, TikTok is the solution to Gen Z, which is not the right answer. No, maybe in a month it might change. It's very fast paced, you know. But so that's the first step. I'd say that they're very multidimensional. They're always trying to see, and they might have a different side to them that they express on these platforms. You know, in TikTok, it might be the more open, you know, sort of characteristic they want to express, their dance moves or whatever it is that they want to do, right? You know, that's right. What TikTok is. For Instagram, it's more of, you know, the status quo of how good my pictures are. You know, I want to make sure that things are great. For Snapchat, it's a lot more personal. It's about dating. It's about sending snaps to your people. So recognizing that each platform has its role to play, because at the end of it, I look at it as communication is going to be largely online to understand them. So to understand, it's first to recognize that, okay, there are different platforms. They use it for different purposes. And then once you start to understand that, you sort of break down, okay, this is what this gen is about, why they use these different platforms, whatever reasons they are. And like I said, it's many of them, I see them using it for the right reasons. Now you have even 13-year-olds on LinkedIn sending networking requests, which is crazy in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know what LinkedIn was. And that's Gen Z still. So there is a different levels within Gen Z too. That's also another important thing. It's not just, again, a one solution to target this entire gen. It's going to be, I'm Gen Z, but a 13-year-old is also a Gen Z. So I'm not going to understand what the 13-year-old's perspectives are. So it is a big gen. It's very dynamic. It's very fast paced. So being on these platforms might be step one, and having an open mind, honestly. I think that's where, I think even our gen will also find that difficult, because now that I'm growing older, I'm finding it difficult to understand 13-year-olds with some of the things that they're doing. And I used to be in that same mindset when I was 13. I'm like, why don't these people get me? Because, like, you know, I feel like I'm making sense. So having an open mind is one. And then, yeah, recognizing the platforms they're in, what are they using those platforms for? Just understanding those nuances. It's and just having an open conversation with them. I think that's also another great thing about Gen Z. They're more than happy to have civil conversations with people. But then again, I like to see the both sides of it. But you also see some Gen Z jumping the gun with certain things, not really understanding the complexities behind this thing, which I guess is maybe a byproduct of how fast internet is, how fast TikTok is, how fast misinformation might spread. So they might, you know, jump the gun and say something that, you know, might not be true. But yeah, I hope that sums it up. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, man, because I think what the kind of dichotomy that I'm seeing, at least in my limited online presence, is that there are certain rules of engagement I feel like Gen Z subscribe by that are a little different and foreign to, like, let's say, a boomer or somebody else that, in a different generation. And, like, I can see how, like, you know, this whole... the way, as you described it, like Gen Zs have silos and like specific purposes of all of these particular individual, you know, channels of communication, like platforms that they use. Whereas previous generations, I think they might see them all as social media and they call them, like, you know, a blanket statement, which is a very interesting thing. But I want to, like, quickly transition towards, like, something like your work, right? Like your startup and what you're doing is essentially targeting the Gen Zs and trying to create value for brands in as much as you can get Gen Zs to, you know, start consuming certain ideas and brands and whatnot. And especially because at least the older Gen Zs are, like yourself, are starting to like earn and, you know, be able to like kind of utilize the utilize the kind of attention given to them to kind of consume different things and buy different things. What is it that you find when you're having these conversations with brands, which are usually run by older folk and like have a little different idea? What do you find that you have to always, first of all, convince them about this generation before you even enter talks about setting a deal together?
It's something that happens on a day-to-day basis because, so just to give the audience some context, I run Fireflies, which is a Gen Z marketing agency based off Dubai. And our whole focus is to help brands just break down this gen, understand how to communicate with them, what do successful campaigns look like, just help them engage it through a couple of assets we own. And those assets are Gen Z influencers. We have good relationship with schools, with universities. So we plug that in for campaigns sometimes. But I think our specialty lies in that we are Gen Z. We continuously work with Gen Z. We know how they want to be communicated with, not to. That's a very important thing, that they want to be a part of the conversation, that they don't like being talked to. That's step one. And what I usually, and yes, it's very difficult, especially in this part of the world. Like it's a lot, I do feel that things move a lot more quicker in the West, whether that's the US, the Europe, that brands pick up things a lot more quicker. They're a lot more open-minded. Here, I feel, not necessarily even in India, I feel like India is also doing a really good job with a lot of the things that's happening in terms of marketing or branding. But in Middle East, it's a lot more structured. There's a lot more red tape. They're very, very, you know, conservative about their approach to certain things. So first of all, the idea of a Gen Z agency in itself is very like, what is this? Like, you know, it's not that they, I wouldn't say that it's bad. Like it's always been, the first response has been, oh, you know, you guys don't know what you're talking about. But they do love talking to us. They do love having the conversations. But when you tell them that, hey, or when you speak with them about this is what this gen wants, and it's completely, you know, different to what their approach was, it's so uncomfortable for them. We tell them no more is this approach of spending $500,000 on one ad going to work. They're just like, no, quality matters. We're supposed to have that one advertisement that we swear. I'm like, no, that's not going to work. Now what you're seeing is that they want to be on all platforms. You can't just focus on Instagram or TikTok even. You need to be on Pinterest maybe. You need to be on Snapchat for other reasons. And then also humanize the brand a lot. That's, I think, been one of the most difficult conversations to have because every brand sees themselves as an entity, as an establishment that needs to communicate in a certain way, where Gen Z hates the establishment. They don't like commercialized items. They don't like this idea of being sold to. They hate it. But when it comes to, you know, when it comes to those communication standpoints, you need to now, and that's what our strategy is, where we start off, where we talk about anything on social media, we're like, we're going to help you humanize your brand. You're going to be talking with Gen Z, with them, or, you know, with whoever. Even I think this applies to millennials in a lot of sense too, that you don't take yourself too seriously as a brand where, you know, we communicate in a certain way. The kind of content that we put up has to be structured. We need to do these things. We need to do that thing. No, it's changed now. You need to start looking at yourself as a human while you're communicating on these channels, because that's what Gen Z loves. And the fact is, we even try and convince them with data, because, you know, we're not just pulling this, you know, out of thin air and telling you that this is how things work. We have data to show that this is what Gen Z wants. This is where they're transitioning to. And unless you start, you know, communicating in that way with them, you're going to fall behind. Yes, you might be doing well in terms of your numbers and your market share and whatever. The data is doing really well for you now. But what about 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Is this business just, do you only look at the immediate future? That's where the conversation gets really difficult about really showing them the bigger picture and what it takes to achieve that bigger picture in this context.
That's very interesting, Michelle, because I just remember a time in which like brands used to be so rigid, right? Like in terms of like, you know, like you'd have a very structured way to go about it. And like the brands didn't speak to you, right? In many ways, like it was, we had to speak to the brand in many ways, right? Like, and it was like, there was this like large disconnect. And these days I see like Wendy's like beefing with, you know, McDonald's and Burger King. Like what is going on? And when you, when you talk about humanizing brands, like these brands talk like humans now, right? Like, it's something that I'm still getting used to. But let's break that down a little bit for me, Vishal. Like, what does it mean to humanize a brand that doesn't have that voice yet? And like, what is it that you're probably thinking through when, you know, you as an agency are trying to say, let's add a, add a human element to you guys?
Yeah. So I think our approach just stems from the fact that we go where the numbers are, where the data is. We are also, you know, we understand that marketing cannot be fluff. That's also something that's just not going to work. Let's be realistic about things. Mm-hmm. So when we started to look at it from a, we moved away from, so we were in a very good space, right? So when we were in university, my co-founders and I, we were event slash brand managers on campus, which meant that we were responsible for bringing brands on board and engaging with students. And we started to see how brands are communicating with them, what kind of activation they're doing. That got my interest really peaked. It piqued my interest because then I started to see how they're communicating online, what the difference is from here as compared to other markets, like let's say the US, even India to a large extent, Europe. And the and like you said, rightly so, like there's so many brands now beefing with each other, but it's in, you know, in all in from a good place. It's just very playful banter. And that's what people are buying into, right? Yeah, like Gen Z is buying into it. So we just see the data that Gen Z loves this, that, you know, there is a sudden surge in terms of following, in terms of the way the brand awareness, the brand reach, when brands start to behave like a human. So we're like, you know, the data proves that there's enough data to back it up. That's what we're using as a model to tell you that that's what you should be doing too. But when we start the process of the brand trying to, you know, find their voice as a human, we start to look at what they're about, you know, what industry are they in, what are they trying to communicate, and look at the bigger picture, not their product in itself, because that's what brands try to do, that hey, this is what we sell, this is what we're good at, this is what, but at the end of it, Gen Z could give, you know, two shits about, you know, what you want as a brand. They want to know, how are you impacting their life? More so, how are you going to make it a lot more better? How are you going to make them look a lot cooler? Is it in right now to have your brand be a part of their culture? That's the questions you need to be asked. And how do you position yourself in that way? So we start by just asking ourselves those questions, like whether it's a simple ice cream brand. We look at, okay, the FMCG industry, that's what you're in. What are the characteristics of a Gen Z? Where do they, you know, when do they typically eat ice cream? Who do they eat it with? You know, so things like, you know, they would usually eat it maybe when they're going through a breakup or when they're watching Netflix. Maybe they, you know, it's summer. It's a lot of different factors that come into it. We question the industry more so than the brand. Once we question the industry and, you know, what's happening in that bigger picture, and then we also understand, where is the brand coming from? Because it's not like everything that they've done up until now is not valid. Obviously, like, you know, they've created a voice, they've created an image. We draw on those factors, and then together we come up with a solution on, okay, you know what, this is what the industry is. This is what Gen Z looks at your industry as, or your product as a bigger picture. And this is where you find your voice. And it's going to be a trial and error process. You're not going to get it right in the first try. You keep adapting to what's happening at that time. And that's the honest just outlook of this gen. It's very, very fast-paced and dynamic. You need to keep up with it, keep up with them, because every week there's something different. And that's the issue with brands here, because they have their content planned out for the next 2 months. When you just like, you don't know what you can't plan out even for tomorrow, because tomorrow a trend might pop up and you need to be on that trend. If you're not on that trend, then you're not cool enough, or you don't get them. So yeah, it's very, very interesting to me. And hopefully brands are starting to recognize it. But it's just that, like anything else, change is just very, it's scary for them. And they just feel like it's not the right approach, when in fact it is the right approach. And yeah, it's an uphill battle, but we're getting there, slow and steady.
Yeah, and I think, Vishal, it's also interesting that the fact that brands are not being like, they're not looking at that 5-year lens, right? Like in 5 years, we're talking about so many millions of Gen Zs having that buying power that they probably don't have right now, right? Like since you're probably at the cusp of like the older Gen Z generation. So it's just like, you're at that stage in which, you know, you're just like the early people that are starting to have that buying power. Now imagine like the next 5 to 10 years when everybody else gets to that point, the remainder of your generation. And then that's a huge target audience that these companies and brands are missing out on. But I wonder often, because of how quickly things are in and out and how hot things are and how cold things get real quick, especially with Gen Z, right? Like I think that it's more pronounced with that generation, with this generation, than with a lot of other generations. I still remember like my people that I know in like my dad's generation, like have such brand loyalty and like, you know, kind of, my dad only wears like certain, like very specific things or very certain things. I think it changed over time. Like millennials are a lot more flexible, but with Gen Z, on the other hand, it's like, it moves like that, you know? And how do you and your colleagues and as an agency where this is like partly what your value add is to know what's hot and not, how are you keeping track of things?
Yeah, it's a very key that you mentioned about loyalties, right? There is no concept of brand loyalty with Gen Z. It's an on and on concept. Like when if a brand thinks that they want Gen Z forever, they're wrong. You can't. And there's a very funny fact that, and I think this just does not apply to just Gen Z. This consumer trend or behavior applies across all generations. So it's a very funny fact that the CMO of, I think MasterCard brought it up first, where he spoke about that apparently, I don't know if it's in the US and I don't want to be misquoted, but the fact is something around the fact that 70% of the people in married couples have cheated, have admitted to having cheated in their relationship while they were married, 70%.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I don't know if the stat is limited to the US or if it's a global statistic or anything, but I know that there is something to do with this. And he said that if you don't see partners being loyal to each other, how do you expect them to be loyal to your brand? Like, why is that expectation even there in your head, right? That they will be loyal to you? And and then what's funny is brands invest millions of dollars in loyalty programs. And it doesn't make sense because the, you know, they are not going to. So when it comes to Gen Z, while they're, you know, fast paced and, you know, they're dynamic and things can change in a minute, the idea or how we keep up with it is just like how everyone else does. Just go with the flow, take it step by step, see what's happening around you and responding quickly. Now, what a lot of brands make mistake was their response time is very, very, very long. In the sense that they think that we need to plan 6 months in advance. That's how it happens everywhere, like the red tape. Yeah. Oh, you know, this campaign is going to be for the next 6 months. They have that. Yes, you can have budgets for a year. Obviously, that's how businesses work. But you cannot have it drilled down to that exact number. You need to, you know, you need to respond to things as and when it comes, which means that our perspective or brand's perspective of quality needs to change. Because what every brand is now fearing is that, you know, when I put up content, it has to be in a certain manner. It has to speak my brand's name, which is obviously true, 100%. When you're putting out content, quality is also a big deal to Gen Z. They judge you on, you know, the kind of pictures you put up, the videos that you're putting up, the way that you communicate. But now that we'll be so fast-paced, how can you plan ahead so well for, you know, quality? You know, you can't have production takes time. Making an ad takes like 6 months. But now you're seeing ads being made. Like I personally have, you know, keep up with Gen Z agencies across the world. So I look at a couple of big ones in the US, again, run by 21-year-olds, million-dollar agencies run by 21-year-olds. And crazy. It's crazy. It's brilliant because, you know, they're so, you know, levels ahead with their thinking and how they do things, how they operate, so professional. It's just incredibly inspiring. And these guys are like, yeah, like 3 to 4 years younger than me as well. And what I've learned from them as well, they're making ads now on iPhones. They're not even investing on DSLRs. They're not even investing on big audio productions or whatever. They're making ads on iPhones. That's working. Like that, people are buying into it.
Yeah.
So what we need to now shift, or brands need to shift their perspective on, is that, hey, we can't plan too ahead. Our response time needs to be a lot more quicker. So let's keep up with the trends. And in order to keep up with it, you need to respond quicker, which means that we need to change our relationship with quality. Can't be that we have this strict cap on, oh, it has to be a certain way. It has to be this way. Because if I have to launch a video, I don't know, something, a video content piece tomorrow, you can't plan that way ahead about, you know, the things you need to do. It might have to be whatever you can do at that point, but just fits with the trend that you're trying to resonate with at that time. And once you do that, yes, some of it might work, some of it might not, but you just have to be okay with those things not working. Because if you think about it, that's what you've been doing all these years as well, but in a lot slower approach. You know, maybe 5 out of your 6 campaigns in the year has worked and 1 didn't. Now it's going to be 30 out of your 40 campaigns worked, but 10 didn't. So the volume will increase. That's how I see it changing, and that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, this is again another super interesting point that I wanted to ask you about, because the way that content is created to be targeted towards audiences, and in this case Gen Z, is so different, right? Like, I think our parents' generation, again, and I'm sorry I keep doing this like comparison between generations, because I think it's important to understand the differences. I mean, television and newspapers, right? Those are the two big things, and maybe even radio in that generation. And so these were like well manicured and curated like pieces that they spent massive budgets on to make it look good or whatnot. And then, as you said, today we're in that space in which a really cool iPhone, kind of like funky, you know, some edgy kind of stuff that works, right? And it's doing great. But another big, I think, step in that direction has been influencer marketing, right? Like, if you again think about from back then to today, and again, this is something that you guys work on, is back then you had like celebrities and like big artists and like big names and all these people having to like be contracted for a long period of time to be associated with your brand so that they do an ad, you know, they're associated with the brand, whatever. And you know, like, you know, Salman Khan was thumbs up, or XYZ person was whatever, or Rolex was like Roger Federer, and, you know, stuff like that. And now what we've moved into is like on YouTube and Instagram and, you know, all this, like, you can pay for that one specific, like, you know, opening of a brand or something along those lines with anybody from 1,000 followers to like 50 million, right? Talk me through that, because I know you guys are doing some wonderful work in identifying influencers that have not, like, you know, completely popped off yet, but utilizing their networks to like even plug products and like plug brands and try to get reaction from them. Let's talk through that a little bit.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me how that landscape has changed, you know, like, and you need to, again, it's just about keeping up with it. And that's where I feel like Gen Z agencies are going to be a thing in the future, because, or even now it is a thing, because you need people from that gen to really tell you, or, you know, speak with, to understand them. So with influencers, a lot of, I think the hype of influencers have increased the past, let's say, 6 years since the advent of Instagram, with YouTube. That's where the coined term has become a lot more popular. We've moved away from now celebrities to just your average Joes who make really good content, now becoming influencers themselves. Now the transition has been really interesting, because if you see, it is allowed, platforms have allowed, what you've noticed, let's say with content, it's always been that there was no sense of democracy with it. And what I mean by that is, when you come to now, come to Instagram, anyone can post a picture and become, you know, if you have a niche and you're doing well in it, you can become an influencer. Whereas back then, the opportunities were just for those famous and the rich and the people who had those opportunities. But now Instagram has made it, you know, anyone can be
a democratic influencer.
It's really democratizing content, if you think about it. Even TikTok, to a large extent now, like, it's easily one of the best apps to exist, in my opinion, because of how it has allowed creators, if you're good, you will get noticed, you will get the views and everything. So with influencers, that's the trend I've noticed, where, you know, if they're good at their niche, they now have that platform to become big if they want to. And the relationship with influencers and Gen Z are also like how I talked about with brands. They now, so I'll give you a quick example. There is obviously the big ones like Charli D'Amelio, you know, 97 yeah. million or 100 million on TikTok, the biggest term on influencer right now. Whereas you see the difference, right? It took PewDiePie 10 years to make 100 right. million subscribers in YouTube, right? It took yeah. her 2 years to do the same thing on TikTok.
Ridiculous. So
it's it's crazy. And so her quick case study I can give you is she launched a drink with Dunkin', which was called the Charli drink. Dunkin' was spectacularly smart with it. They launched the drink, and I think close to a eight-figure deal for her. I'm pretty sure it was in the eight figures. And yeah. it led to such a big impact on their sales and their numbers that it's crazy how well it did, to a point where it even influenced sales here in the Middle East. Wow. Whereas an influence in the US, where you would not assume that it would, but it did. So that's how powerful influencers have become. And she's not a celebrity in the sense that she's never been on movies or anything like that, just on TikTok doing what she does. But that's one extreme side of it. There's also Travis Scott, you know, the I don't know if you heard about that Travis Scott meal that McDonald's launched.
McDonald's,
crazy. Like, and it what it also led to, a byproduct of these influencer marketing, is trends. Like a big trend on TikTok because of that campaign or that collaboration was Gen Z driving up to McDonald's drive-thrus, and when they ask you what you want to order, they just blast off Sicko Mode by Travis Scott,
right,
and that's what they play, right? And that became such a huge trend on TikTok. It was incredible. One of the well thought of campaigns, and really one of my favorite campaigns to exist. And that led to obviously an increase in sales, and that just trend and that connection with the brand became a lot more stronger. So that's one extreme of it, because these are well established, very popular, 15 million, 100 million people following them. Now, the other hand of it, you have just your popular kid in school who has like 2,000, 3,000 followers on Instagram, who have like, you know, maybe 5,000 on Instagram. These are just people who are not bloggers, who are not doing it because they want to do it. It's just that they are popular by nature, just because, I don't know, just by the vanity of it, they might just look good, or, you know, in the eyes of society, or they're just popular because they're funny, or, you know, people know them because they're a jock. The influence that they have at a grassroots level is insane. And the way that a lot of platforms work, the engagement that they get is a lot better as compared to these bigger influencers too.
Interesting.
Because if you take, let's say, simple example I'll give, with our campaign with Bath and Body Works, we had 20 micro influencers. These are influencers anywhere between 3,000 to, let's say, 15,000 followers. And that's nano influencers, not even micro, sorry, nano influencers in the eyes of big agencies or big brands. They're like, what? They don't even look at them.
Right.
And some of these people got their first brand deals because of us. Like, we are the first ones to give them a product and be like, talk about it or do whatever it is you want with them. And with just 20 influencers, we were able to hit around 90,000 unique accounts, students. And we were also able to hit 30% in engagement. Which, if to give you a perspective, average what influencers in the 80,000 or 100,000 get is 3%. So we, the engagement rates were like 10 times what the market average was. So we literally proved to brands that, you know what, you don't need these big influencers to make, you know, if you want to make an impact, just stick to popular kids in these schools and universities. And also let them be very natural about the content, right? Yes, you give them, hey, talk about these things, talk about that thing, but be very free about, you know, how you want to showcase whatever you want to showcase. And more often than not, they would come up with the ideas on their own, how they want to create the content, what they want to do with it, how they want to showcase the product from their point of view. And that context is key, because if you tell them what to talk about, then you're removing the context. Then maybe their audience doesn't get what they're trying to talk about. They're like, no, this is coming off as fake. And that's what is a key characteristic of this gen. They know what's fake and what's not. So if you're trying to sell them something, they know that, oh, this is too commercial. This is too, you know, this is not what I want to see. But when you give them the product, and when you talk to them about how would you use this in your day-to-day life, or, you know, what does this product mean to you, whatever it is, talk about it, you get context. And I think context is key when it comes to marketing now. Unless you're able to provide that context, you're not going to build that brand rep with this gen. So yeah, it's interesting, and it's just going to keep increasing. I think the power that nano influencers have is going to get recognized more often than not. The engagement rates that they're getting, the data shows it. Like, we don't need to just, you know, talk about, quality over quantity and all that. No, it's just, you want numbers, we want numbers to back it up too, that this is where the future is. And I think influencer marketing is going to be, a thing for a while. But what I'll also say is that it has to be in the right manner, in the sense that give them the freedom to create the content. Do not give them too many variables to play with and be like, no, talk about this, talk about that. Give them that freedom to create whatever content that they want, or work with them while you create the content. Obviously, if you want to put in that extra money, let's say there is a huge difference between, let's say, Pepsi working with influencers and, let's say, I don't know, Maza or a smaller brand working with an influencer. Obviously, Pepsi would want to make it a lot bigger and better and invest a lot more money in it, which is completely fine. But while you work to create that content with them, make sure they're part of that conversation on, you know, how do you see us making the content? Do you want to be like, and then obviously put in your effort of making the quality better, hiring a crew or whatever it is. But yeah.
Yeah, this is super interesting to me, man. Like, I'm just thinking of like how, all our schools, all our high schools, all like universities, we all knew the popular kids, right? And like, and the popular kids always were the trendsetters. Like, you wondered about like, okay, why are they wearing that, or like, why did they say that? What movies are they watching, right? Like, and I see how that can like play into kind of being like a really useful tool for brands to like actually tap into that. I want to talk about this like thing that you just mentioned in this last comment about how Gen Z is able to kind of really separate between what's real, what's fake, what's being pushed on them, what's not. Let's talk about that a little bit. Like, where do you think that awareness comes from? Because it has to come from a place of being really comfortable with like knowing the differences of all of these, right? But still, when you think about a large number of Gen Zs, you're still talking about like teenagers who, at least in previous generations, used to be naive and easily gullible. Like, you know, something's trendy and cool, fine, they'll get it. Somebody's telling them to eat something, drink something, they'll probably get it. But now you're talking about a generation that's very aware, that's clearly like able to discern between all these different things. So how do you, yes, it is marketing, it is brands trying to push their products on them, but how do you make it feel more natural?
This is now what we are trying to also figure out, like, in the sense that you have your obvious ways of like I talked about, I think volume of content is now going to be a lot more important than focusing on quantity, in the sense, and distribution is going to matter a lot. So before, brands are going to be looking at it like, okay, hey, we're going to be on Instagram, Facebook this year. We're going to focus all our efforts into making good quality content there. That's it. But now what the approach needs to be is that, hey, you need to be on multiple platforms and tune your content to match those platforms. So even the caption that you use for a picture on Instagram is going to be very different from what you're going to do if the same thing goes as a snap on Snapchat. So the context is key, right? Like, how you distribute the content is going to be very key for indie platforms, and the volume is going to matter. Now, how I see it going forward is going to be really interesting, right? So before, you used to have commercials in between shows. You look at that commercial, the product talks about it or whatever. They invest a lot of money on it. Cool. Now, what I think is what I see the future is going to be is that there's going to be shows about the product or sponsored by the product. So let's say a bank wants to talk to Gen Z or wants to promote, instead of maybe investing $10 million on paid advertising throughout the world, they might invest $10 million on a TV show, which is going to be by them, about banking, about the industry, about, let's say, a popular, let's talk about law or banking itself. Maybe a show like Suits is going to be something that HSBC starts, and they're going to have like actual characters. They're going to have actual directors working on the concept, and they will just plug in HSBC as the bank where all of this is happening.
Right. Right.
That is going to be the future. Like it is where the world. So basically what you're going to do have is brands now going to be in either entertaining their audience or they're going to educate them. That's where marketing is going to come through. Not by talking about their products. So let's say, even if you're looking at, and it's happening, like all the good brands are doing it. I'm not to say that brands are not doing it in the West. There are brands already buying into it. They are investing in stuff. So it's going to be like, a brand might do weekly blogs of whatever it is that they're doing. Like, you know, it could just be like, a simple example could be a Pizza Hut, where they have their employees just blogging about their day-to-day life of a Pizza Hut employee. It could be, and yes, there might not be a direct spend on, let's say, because you push that out, you're going to get a sale. But in the long run, in a year, your viewership will increase because people just want to watch that blog for fun. They're not going to watch
it. Yeah, and it becomes embedded in the public conscience a little bit, right? Like, I still remember like early days of TikTok when freaking Washington Post, right? Like journalists that too. Like, I mean, they had started like just putting content out, and you know, like all these like journalists dancing and trying to like do stuff. And it's still embedded in my head. Like I think about Washington Post and like they're cooler than like maybe another, you know, newspaper or something like that. So it's stuck. And I see how it works. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's gonna be very interesting on how now the question is gonna be. How am I going to educate or entertain my audience? That's going to be the key questions. And it's going to be in that context, as I keep, you know, reiterating, the context is key. So in these platforms, I need to put out volume of content, not just less, because only through volume will you be able to achieve context, right? Because one video is not going to speak to 10 different kinds of Gen Z. 10 videos are going to help you. So maybe one blog wasn't able to hit the, let's say, I don't know, the math kids in school, but another blog was able to hit those math kids, but it didn't hit the popular jocks, you know. That's how it's going to be. So you need to be able to create context through different videos. And at the end of it, they're just going to watch it because it's fun. But obviously, subconsciously, it's in their head that who is doing this? Pizza Hut is doing this, or who is doing this? Nike is doing this. Fair. And that brand affinity or that brand purchase will definitely come out of it. It's not that this is just going to be fluff. It's not going to lead to any sales. It will. But that's how you need to now change your approach to marketing. It cannot be, this is the new Ultra Boost. This is what we're going to do now. It's going to be that, you know what? And that's where, you know, now that's how important athletes are going to be. How influencers are going to be and how they're going to help them achieve context with these people. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting and exciting to see which brands take that first leap of doing these things. Like it's going to be super interesting to see, like, let's say an HSBC coming up and saying that we're going to produce a $10 million show and, you know, it targeting towards maybe even the, it could be just like a simple example, could be HSBC starting the show targeting 24 to 30 year olds at that time, about, you know, financial management, about banking accounts, how cool it is to own, you know, invest. That's going to be the show. It is fictional. It has characters. It has everything. But subconsciously, they're watching it and being entertained. And you're just like, but it would be cool to be like them. You know, it would be cool to have, you know, this account and, you know, manage these funds and do these things. So who do I go to for that? Oh, wait, HSBC is doing that. Let me just hit them up. You know, that's how I see it going to be. And it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how this pans out, man. And now just like kind of moving tracks a little bit, I think we've talked about like what makes Gen Z unique. We talked about like what is it about them that is so valuable to a brand, and like, you know, about, and ways in which that you guys at Fireflies are going about doing this in such innovative ways. But I want to touch upon something that you mentioned right off the bat, and you said this is like my confession, you know, Gen Zs are soft. And I'm curious about this, right? Like, I mean, obviously every generation has its pros and cons and like characteristics that make them likable and dislikable and all of that. But I think like a very common criticism of Gen Z is exactly this, that you're soft, you're too woke, you're canceling everybody. Like there's that naivety that's kind of like embedded into this generation that's very unique to this generation. Let's talk about that. Why did you say that? Okay, there's this thing about us being soft, and What consequences does that have in like the way Gen Zs are perceived?
Yeah, I know it's gonna be a controversial thing, and I hope I don't get canceled because of this. But it's I go where data is, where facts are, right? Whenever I make decisions or choose to believe certain things, I am a very practical person that way. I look at science, I look at facts, and I look at where the data is. If science and facts say that, then I believe it because that's a fact, you know. The problem with this gen, which again stems from how powerful these platforms are, is that they are quick to jump the gun with certain things where they might see a piece of content or info without context. Again, this is where the context thing is so powerful, without knowing the full picture. And, you know, because they're so eager to, you know, be a part of what's trendy, you know, have their say in things, because everyone wants to have their say in something in Gen Z, they jump the gun and say these things. Oh, you know, this is wrong, this is that, this is this thing, when in fact the whole picture might be different, something else. Now, a byproduct of that, or what I've also noticed because of that, what's happening is, they are not able to, I feel like a lot of them are not able to take criticism. They're not able to understand that certain things are just difficult. Like, yes, obviously, you know, this generation is the reason why we're seeing a lot more, you know, a lot more openness for the LGBTQ communities. You're seeing a lot more conversations around sustainability. You're seeing a lot more inclusiveness, brand diversity. Yes, that's all amazing. That's why I love this gen. That's why I'm so proud to be a part of this gen. But because they feel like that's, you know, they put that in a pedestal, that, you know, this, that, you know, they feel like every, that's all that life is about, and that's what everyone else is just going to go against them. Or, you know, if they're offering a viewpoint that's a little different from theirs, they immediately are just like, no, that's wrong. When they might not take a step back and see the bigger picture or where that person from that gen is coming from. Because, see, like, you know what, like, let's face it, like, our communities or people from our country, or our, let's say, our, you know, even our parents, our uncles and aunts, our grandparents, they're not probably as open about LGBTQ as compared to we are, right? And that's not because they're bad people. It's because of with the way they were brought up, with certain values, the things that they were taught over, what, the span of 30 to 40 years. And I think Gen Z just expects them to change their perspective like this when it's difficult. You can't just expect them to have that change overnight or understand everything that they're, you know, what you're putting out in front of them. Yes, you're right. Absolutely right about these things. You need to be accepting. You need to be all that. But give them that, you know, the benefit of the doubt that, you know, what, they have been brought up in a different bubble, different gen, everything different from you. So they're trying to understand and make sense of these things, which is very new to them. So again, because of that, this cancel culture has become such a big deal. They just want to cancel everybody, which really, you know, as a gen, I don't like that, because I'm like, you're putting a bad name on our gen with, when it comes to these things, you're not making informed decisions. You're not really looking where the facts are, or what, or trying to put yourself in the other person's shoe. You know, I think that's really, really, you know, it annoys me to a certain extent as well, with this gen, that, you know, they just, they're almost seeing activism or standing up for these people as a means to just, I don't know, just cancel people or just, you know, go against what the people, this thing is, because that's what has become trendy. And what, and sometimes because of that, the actual reason what you're fighting for becomes lost. Are you just jumping on this LGBTQ train because that's what everybody's doing? Are you trying to understand actually what they're going through? That's what I'm it's just really annoying me. But also from, just from a corporate sense, right? From a, let's say from a company standpoint, from, you know, even just trying to achieve things in the world. I don't know why, but, and I don't have an answer for this, but just Gen Z just seems very soft about, you know, having long hours at work, or, you know, someone was mean to me at work, or the way that my boss spoke to me wasn't right, or, you know, this client said something rude. I'm like, that's just the way the corporate world is. Like, yes, obviously people have to be more kind and more accepting. I'm on all on board for all those things. But at the end of it, if you want to achieve some stuff in life, you got to work hard at it. You know, yes, mental health days and all those things, I'm all up for those things. But that's, you know, it's not something that you can just keep demanding, because that's not what the world is. And when they don't get it, they're just like, oh, you know, They don't understand us or they don't get us. But I'm just like, no, some things are just difficult in life. You just need to accept it and, you know, take it in that stride and move on. And you need to put in those hours. You need to sacrifice those things. Yeah, I'm not going to deny it's been shit for this generation. It's the worst possible time in the economy for them. This graduating batch has it so bad.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, and again, like, they're using all these external circumstances as excuses to not do the work. And that's really annoying me sometimes. Not all of them. I'm not generally.
Yeah, of
but
course.
A lot of them are. Yeah, a lot of them are, which is, I think, why I said that, you know, they're soft. And I feel like there is a lot to, maybe it's also because of the age, you know, we're young, we're still growing. A lot of them maybe haven't seen enough of life to understand that. And I think that's what they need to respect the other generations for, that at the end of it, experience still does count. You know, you can't just write them off just because they're not trendy. They have a lot more experience and a lot more life than you have. So yes, open conversations have to become a thing. Yes, I do agree that, you know, boomers and all do have to now give us a space to also have our say in things. I think that's important. That dialogue is important. But at the end of it, you need to also have that respect for the older gen and be like, you know what, their experience counts and that might have more value than what we're seeing at this point. In certain scenarios, in certain situations, you have to accept it. And that's okay. Like, you know, that's why a 14-year-old is not running the country. Maybe a 65-year-old or a 70-year-old is running it, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know why they're not able to wrap their heads around that. So, yeah, I think that's what this, just the negative aspect of that space.
Yeah, and I think it's fair, man. Like, I think that growing phase of, like, you know, trying to realize where that balance is, like where is that, like, midpoint for you? I think it's very important. I think Gen Z are just doing it more so publicly than any other previous generations. That whole, like, wave of trying to understand, like, what is this balance between the world that currently exists and my ideal world? And, I mean, maybe I'm too jaded by, like, life circumstances, but
I just feel it's true.
Sometimes life has to hit you hard for you to realize that there are some things that are non-negotiables and there are some things that are negotiables. And, like, I need to find where my priorities lie. And, I think as a generation, I think the Gen Z, Gen Z is eventually going to find that out. And maybe they find that out in a public manner too, which might be an interesting thing to take stock of. But Vishal, before we wind down, like, a couple things that I want to touch on. One is what's your outlook for this generation, right? Like, now we're entering that wave where this generation is going to be front and center, especially in terms of a lot of decisions that are going to be made in the world, because it's a large population. It's an important generation. It's a very vocal generation. So what's your outlook? Like, what do you think the next 5 to 10 years are going to hold for this particular generation?
Yeah. So I want to touch it on three fronts, right? So one of them is, it's just for the gen themselves. Like, I feel like this generation has been consumed by a lot of things like results, milestones, you know, comparisons, where they feel like life is achieved by reaching a certain status quo. And that stems from the fact that we're very ambitious by nature. Like, we do want to do big things. That's why you're seeing a lot more startups. The hustle culture has become a thing. Everyone wants to do a podcast and, you know, start their own blog or, you know, start their own company, which is amazing. I love that about this gen. And I hope it continues because we do need more of that. But the problem is they started for the wrong reasons. The intent is because they want to have that status quo of, you know, what, I did this. I am an entrepreneur. The titles, the Forbes 30 under 30, the, and to be very honest, I've fallen into that trap because, you know, I don't know, for whatever reason, I thought that's what would bring me happiness. But
yeah,
I think for this gen, the focus needs to be on the process, like finding something that's the day-to-day that makes you happy. What is it that, you know, just brings you happiness, and you'd focus on the processes more than just the milestones, you know? I think that's going to be a challenge for this gen. They should explore a lot more. They should find that balance. And obviously, I'm not saying milestones are not important. Growth is not important. Those are. And wanting millions of dollars and being famous is not a bad thing. It's just that those things will only come with the right intent. I think intent is important. I think this guy needs to understand that intent. And a part of that intent really, really needs to be on impact and on what you can do for the world. Because unfortunately or fortunately, we are in this gen where we have to save the world. Like, there's too many things going wrong. We are, you know, and I'm not being negative. The facts speak for themselves. We're looking at a lot of, you know, destruction and negativity in terms of in where the world is heading, right? In terms of sustainability, about the environment, about, you know, biodiversity, about just politics, about, you know, a lot of things. I feel like now there is no more this. I don't think there is a scenario where Gen Z can be like, oh, no, when, you know, there are other people to take care of those things. You need to have a little bit of intent on, you know, what can I do to do my part? It can be as simple as, you know, just being involved in community decisions or volunteering or even simple things like voting or, you know, whatever it is. But it needs to be there in their mind that, okay, I need to find a way to give back or just do my role or do my bit in this community. And I need to find a way to increase that as I grow older. Like, it can't be that the same things that I do to contribute to. And that's just my personal take on it, because we, like, the few 10% or 20% of those Gen Z who wants to make the difference, who have that within themselves, is not gonna, it's not enough to save the world on where it's heading, unfortunately. Like, we need as many as people involved in it at the grassroots level, making the change that they can. Those things also stem by just being kind to others, which I think they are already, which being more accepting, being having an open mind, those things are going to be very key. But what I think the next, I think the next 5 to 10 years are going to be pivotal on how Gen Z responds to the pandemic, in the sense that how is this going to, like, what is the workplace going to look like? That's going to be very interesting. A lot of brands have already come out and said that there's no, offices are not going to be a thing anymore. If you want to come to work, you can. If you want to do it at home, it's done. So now that begs the question, will that lead to reduced social interactions? Will just people be comfortable being at home? It's questions to ask. I don't know what the answers are. We're just going to have to see how it unfolds. Will Gen Z be more demanding from offices now that, you know, let's say, or, you know, we're all hoping that, touch with the band, it gets better and we'll be back to concerts and things like that. And, you know, us meeting each other and all those sort of things. But when we get to that stage, will this have this impact of the flexibility be there? And now Gen Z comes and demands that, no, we don't want to come to work at, you know, 9, or, you know, spend 20 to 30 bucks on transportation to come to your office to work there when I can do the same thing at home. So it'll also not just be Gen Z's role, but how the other generations are going to respond to the demands of Gen Z. Whether that's finding that common, like you said, the balance on the negotiables and non-negotiables. But I do think the ball is a lot more on the other gen's court, because they have to, at the end of the day, make the decision on what is going to be the best for the next gen, because at the end of it, they are going to take over the world. They're going to be the ones coming up with the solutions and ideas. So let's give them the best platforms and tools, within reason, obviously, in order to be as comfortable as possible to achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve. And, you know, since it's going to be very interesting, I think the response is going to be great. I believe it's going to be, I have positive, you know, I'm positive that the brands will respond in the right manner, the right brands will. I'm seeing that here as well, like how even like SMEs here, startups here are recognizing those things, and they are, you know, giving that opportunity for Gen Z to have their say in things, to listen to them, speak with them about things. So it's going to be very interesting, but I am more of an optimistic person myself, so I hope it goes that way. But if it doesn't, we just have to figure it out, you know, as it comes.
Fair enough, fair enough. And I think that's very beautifully put, man. But before we wind down, one last thing. There are a lot of exciting things that's happening in your life. I noticed there's a new album or some of your songs coming out that you're releasing, which to all my listeners, Vishal's a tremendous musician as well. In addition to all the other other hats he wears, he's a podcaster. He's gives talks at like universities and schools, inspiring, you know, younger generations and other younger Gen Zs in many ways. And There's a lot of exciting things going on. Let's talk about like what's your outlook for the next few years for yourself.
Yeah.
What is it that you're most excited about? What are the things that you're doing for yourself? What are the things that you, you'd like to chase down in terms of your goals and aspirations? Let's talk about you a little
bit. Yeah, I mean, thanks for the kind words. Yeah, I've always been very keen to explore different avenues just because I'm a person who is not just happy with doing one thing. I need to have different things that I'm doing just to feel that sort of satisfaction. That, and that might not be the most effective manner in terms of scaling, because, you know, it's tripling down on one thing is a lot more effective than, you know, going maybe 40% on two different things or three different things. But I'm my, obviously the big picture, the goal for the next couple of years is to build Fireflies as a brand that adapts to Gen Z's needs. So while the branding and marketing is our major division, we are also having another division where we're helping schools and universities build incubators. So the idea is for, you know, anyone who like run them through a process of what a startup incubator is, because our co-founder, my co-founder has incredible experience in it, being a Gen Z himself in that startup space. So we want to build incubators from schools level up, getting students through that process of what it's like to set up, get an idea, bring it to fruition. And that whole 8-week or 7-week process in itself teaches them a lot of skills. So we're working with schools to try and release that. It's just in the very early stages, which is our training division. That's something that, so building those two fronts for Fireflies is going to be the next, legacy. That's what I want my legacy to be, and just, you know, taking it from Dubai to London to New York. That's going to be my goal for my adapting the needs again. Like I said, according to what Gen Z wants, maybe I'll have to pivot to doing something else. But the Fireflies as a brand would remain the same.
Yeah.
And you know, doing just different things on that. Yeah, like you said, podcast is something else that I'm very keen on. That's more of my personal brand as Vishal. I just love having conversations with people. So I've always felt that, you know, those conversations can help others just by, you know, listening to something that the other person has to say.
Yeah.
Can be so powerful. Like, I know how many times I've been inspired just by hearing an interview with a celebrity or interviews or just podcasts or whatever. So I'm like, and I have that privilege or the honor of meeting these cool people on a day-to-day, on a weekly basis. So, and a lot of them are quite happy to come on call and just talk about this and have this conversation. So the podcast is something that, you know, I'm just doing for fun. It's not no really big commercial objectives with it. Music also, funnily enough, is that's a lot more, I think a lot more in my priority, maybe as compared to the podcast, because I do want to see if it's possible to have two careers in two different industries simultaneously. Right. And I think that's going to be very interesting for Gen Z too. Maybe we might see a person having two jobs, not in the freelance sense, but actually contracted to two different jobs in two different companies, maybe in two different industries.
Yeah.
But that can be a thing, because again, a lot of Gen Z are like me who don't like doing one thing. They want to do different things.
Yeah.
So I like challenging the status quo who says that, you know, you can only be successful or big at one thing. I'm like, no, maybe I can be big at two things, but it just requires a lot more effort. So, and those are two things that make me happy. So it doesn't really feel like work. So
fair enough. Yeah.
Music, podcast, the two wings and the Fireflies, and impact is something else. That's I'm slowly working my way into that. So I'm just educating myself about the field. I'm going to be doing a couple of short courses on the UN SDGs a lot more, what the goals are there, how can I bring some of those learnings to the, you know, Middle East. Slowly started my conversation with the World Food Program. It's very still early stages on, you know, trying to see what I can do for them. Hopefully some collaborations with you. It's going to be exciting, man.
Got some exciting stuff coming up,
So I'm really excited, and I'm hopeful. I'm just going to, whatever that at the end of it makes me happy, I'm just going to do it and just have fun with it. That's pretty much my goal.
Love that, man. Vishal, honestly, every conversation I have with you is so inspiring, and it gets me to, like, I'm optimistic, you know, like speaking to people like you and others that, like, I mean, like, I remember seeing you in school, man. Like, you know, when we both were kids, but you were far younger than I was at that point, right? Like, it's so... Seeing that transition from there to where you are right now, the ideas that you have, the ways you want to explore things, the way we are trying to work with each other to try to make some kind of impact happen, I think I'm very optimistic. It's really inspiring, and I'm so glad that you could join us and like really shed some light on Gen Z's, man. I think a very misunderstood generation, one that we really need to like unlock in the years ahead. So thanks again, brother. Thanks for joining Millennial Musings, and I really appreciate it.